Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show, with great guests and great laughs all call home. Now, from the Man Cave Studios in New Jersey, here are your hosts of the Bottom Line Sports Show.
So awkward to be doing this. Good evening, Gerald Brown. Back on the air where it all started. And for some reason, every time we get back on Blog Talk Radio, I always feel compelled to be able to play the. I don't know where do we have the welcome back? Well, the welcome back music. I think we played that one time when Penny was on. But nevertheless, Gerald Brown here. So great to be back on here on Tuesday nights, and you know. Can I get a round of applause? Is a round of applause? Is there anything, a laugh track, or we have any of those things? I don't know if they're working or anything like that. But still in all, great to be back on air and having so much fun to be here as we prepare for going to talk some NFL. You know, if you follow us most of the time on SiriusXM NBA Radio, you know, we primarily delve right into you know, basically just talking about a lot of the NFL and the NBA. So it's great to be back on air, to be able to talk a little NBA stuff, NFL stuff. But going to talk about the playoffs, college football playoffs that took place last night. Former safety Roy Williams will be joining us. I guess we'll get all the little technical glitches all taken care of and out of the way. But still in all, we're going to talk with Roy Williams, get his thoughts and opinions, not only in the championship game in college football, but just really the wild card playoffs. He played for the Cincinnati Bengals along with the Dallas Cowboys. As well as we'll talk about the Panthers and the divisional round now that the Steelers and the Green Bay Packers are moving on. So we'll get his thoughts on that. Eddie Murphy is hanging out with us tonight. The great Eddie Murphy. Murph, it feels so good to be doing this. This is where it all started for Howie and myself.
Oh, it's great to join. I'm glad we finally got this back up. New year. I mean, it's another full year of good shows, so it's going to be good.
It's been a long time coming, my friend, and it's so good to be able to have you an opportunity to be on with me. As you know, definitely it gets an opportunity to be able to mix it up and be able to talk some football because my blood was boiling, and I really was so disgusted and disappointed. And you know, before we even delve into the NFL, I want to go back and let's look at last night's college football action that took place last night. Nick Saban, 45-40, Alabama wins over Clemson. Is it too early to start talking about maybe Nick Saban, the greatest coach in all of football? Or better yet, is he the greatest Alabama coach?
No, I don't think it's too early at all. I mean, he's only one behind Bear Bryant. He's won four with Alabama, one with LSU, so he could do it in multiple programs. You saw his just, you know, the recruiting prowess he's had since he's been there. The top guys in the nation, you know, he goes to their living rooms and he convinces their families to come, you know, let their son or, you know, go play with for him. And it works. And he just builds a great program year after year with four titles in 7 years down there. Every recruiting class he's signed on has won. It's just incredible. And it's funny what he said, too, at the end of the game was, well, I guess it was today's press conference. If he gave up that many yards and that many points the first game of the year, people would be saying, what's wrong with Alabama? But because it was the last game of the year, no one says anything. But, I think he's definitely, you know, right up there with the greatest of all time. Personally, I think it's for him to try to take the next step, go to the NFL, see what you can do at the pro level. You know, it didn't work out in Miami, but he's done basically everything he could do at the college level.
You see, I don't think it's the perfect move because I think you have to understand where you fit in. And that's been the biggest problem with a lot of these coaches and stuff. And think about this. Steve Spurrier, all the work he had pulled in and put in and built the dynasty at Florida. We've seen him. We've seen countless guys. I think probably the only one, if I'm not mistaken, you can probably say if had some success. I mean, you can go back and say Bill Walsh, but maybe Jimmy Johnson. But it's really – in this climate, you know, maybe Jim Harbaugh. I don't know if Nick Saban, at this stage of his life and his career, that it's really worth it, because why tip? Are you saying this because it's possible he could get bored?
No, I mean, just look at a guy like Pete Carroll did it. I mean, Pete Carroll dominated at the college level.
Right, that's right, Pete
really
Carroll, right.
Yeah, at the NFL level. I mean, Saban's still in his 60s. He's won 5 championships, with two different SEC teams. There's really nothing else he could do. Do you want to stay on and keep you know, accumulating these championships and surpass Bear Bryant? I mean, if he wants to do that, sure. He probably very easily could within the next couple of years. But I don't see what the point is. Like, he's dominating the whole college level. Do you want to go to a different program and rebuild a different program? I mean, that's another possibility, but I don't see the point of that. So I think the only next stop is to go back to the NFL and fix what he couldn't do in Miami. And I don't blame that Miami situation solely on him. It was a bad, you know, they have a bad ownership group, they have a bad front office. There's plenty of, you know, good jobs right now, you know, hint, hint, the Giants with a really good front office. You're going to have a good quarterback. It makes a lot of sense to go there and try it out. I don't see the issue with that at all, because there's really nothing else to prove at Alabama. Yeah, he's a god down there, you know, but there's nothing else for him to do.
Yeah, I just think that clearly, I don't know. I just don't see that happening. And the reason why I tell you this is because you're the king of your castle. You're in Camelot. You're in Alabama. I mean, listen, they have a booster club that actually pays his mortgage, all those things. He has everything he wants. Why go to the NFL, where you're going to be in a situation and possibly have to rebuild? The expectation, now you brought up the Giants. Think about, he comes to New York, the New York media. He hasn't endeared himself to the media and national media in Alabama. You know the animal that exists in New York, and the expectation is to win. And I think that having the time to evolve and develop, you know, your program, it means something. You know, Pete Carroll, I think it was tough, but let's be honest, though. You know, you brought up Pete Carroll, Merv, but look, he knew those sanctions were coming. He knew those sanctions were coming,
sure.
And he didn't
want
to be there for the lean years. He got a sweet deal with the Seattle Seahawks and really knew that he could be in a situation where he could be there, and it was a very little expectation, going to a market in the Pacific Northwest where there's not that sense of urgency to win, win, win. He was able to build it, and they caught lightning in a bottle. You know, you think about all the draft picks that, you know, low-round guys, they were able to do some things that not many other programs or organization were able to do, which have low round draft picks actually pan out. And then, oh, by the way, you take a third round guy and Russell Wilson, pay him peanuts, and you're able to build this unbelievable dominant team. Deshaun Watson, is he the next great quarterback? I mean, is it time to say that he's the next great quarterback?
He could be. I mean, he reminded me a lot of during the broadcast, you reminded them of Vince Young. Everyone remembers that Vince Young game versus USC years back in the Rose Bowl. I mean, he kind of had shades of a Cam Newton type player, just a big, strong guy, a nice arm, and can move when he needs to. And that's, you know, the way the NFL is going is you need to have a quarterback that can be mobile and can move out of the pocket. He could definitely do that, and he still has a couple years to develop. So I think it's a really good start. Clemson has a great player and a guy who could lead them maybe back to the same spot next year. So that's something to look forward to if you're a Clemson fan. And I think for NFL teams, I mean, they definitely watched that. All those scouts definitely had their eyes open for that. So I think we could be seeing a guy who could come to the NFL and do some crazy things at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I'm not really sold on Deshaun. I think that, look, it's nothing wrong with being a great quarterback, college quarterback, but the expectations of, look, we've seen so many of these guys come from this spread offense, and we've seen the guys in Johnny Manziel, we've seen RG3, we see the young man who's the backup quarterback. I guess he's supposed to be the quarterback in waiting with the Jets. The young man that followed RG3 at Baylor University, his name is escaping me. Bryce Petty, but you can't – the NFL – look, the jury's still out on Marcus Mariota. If he develops into this unbelievable quarterback – yeah, if he develops into this unbelievable quarterback, Merv, you know, then you can say perhaps there is a place in the NFL for these, you know, spread offense quarterbacks. I just think that clearly a young man that's very dual threat, but the question is, can he get up under the center? You know, are you throwing to a spot? You know, those windows are very, very tight when you get to the next level, and defenses are a lot faster. So I didn't see enough last night to say, no, that kid is a pro. I didn't see enough last night to say that.
I think you're way off on that. I think, first of all, you're way off. I think Mariota's already proven. And you said you put up, you know, RG3 and Johnny Manziel as your but I don't think you could say those guys are busts. I mean, Manziel, when he played this year and the Browns didn't screw him over, he was throwing for 400 yards versus Pittsburgh, and he had a pretty good game versus Seattle. And then RG3, you look at his career stats, you know, when they let him play, he has double the amount of touchdowns as he has interceptions. So I don't think his career is neither one of his careers are definitely over. And Watson, he had so much praise last night from everyone, whether it's on Twitter reaction from all those college football analysts, guys like, you know, Kirk Herbstreit or Todd McShay, all the things they were saying about him. You know, he could have won that game. And I think that he's a very talented person on a team that doesn't have as much talent on the offensive side than maybe Alabama did. And like I said, he has another year to develop, too. The NFL has changed. The NFL is not totally an under-center type quarterback. Like, yes, in the NFL, you need to obviously have an arm, and it's much harder to throw and complete passes. You have to be smarter with your decisions. You can't just rely on athleticism like the college team can let you. But you look at these top quarterbacks in the NFL, a lot more taking, you know, shotgun snaps or pistol snaps than under-center. I mean, Peyton Manning couldn't go under-center. Tom Brady and Eli Manning doing that, Mike, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger. All their systems, their offenses they're running now are all, you know, shotgun snap-oriented offenses. So I think it could adapt if necessary, and he blows a lot of time.
Yeah, I just, you know, Murphy, you just have to see a little bit more. And, I mean, I just think we just need to see a little bit more. And I think that clearly, you know, if you can tell me that there's a spread offense quarterback that excelling in the NFL, I mean, I don't know if you could say, you know, when you brought up Marcus Mariota, his body of work, you know, is so limited. I mean, look, I knew when I saw Jameis Winston in that championship game against Auburn, and then last year, to back it up and know that it wasn't a fluke 2 years ago, that kid is a pro quarterback. He can get up under the center. Yes, he might not be as fast as some of these other guys, but he's very elusive, and he plays very well to have the it factor. I don't see that in terms of where it translates to the next level with Deshaun Watson. I just don't see it.
Yeah, well, Mariota had a better NFL season than Jameis Winston did.
Well, they only won two games.
The team getting the first pick in the draft because the team is abysmal, but solely on quarterback play. I mean, Mariota
You look at the impact Winston had on his franchise, which translated into 6 wins compared to the impact Mariota had on his team that translated into 2 wins. I'm going to have to say Jameis had a stronger impact or better year than Mariota.
None. There's no way he did. I mean, better physical year is not even close. I mean, and the Bucs also have one of the top rushers in the NFL with 2 pretty good receivers and a really good tight end. Titans will have none of that. So I think it was just a case there where Mariota is the one good player they have in the team on a really untalented roster. And the Buccaneers actually have some talent. You know, they could have had a better year than I thought. I mean, look, I'm not saying we've had a bad year. We've had a pretty good year. But the Buccaneers do have some talent on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how this young man develops. But, I mean, again, the future looks bright for Clemson, and just definitely see that hopefully, you know. And another thing before we move on, you know, I've been really advocating this. We got to give some credit and some love to the ACC because, yes, it's a basketball conference. But let's be clear about one thing. To have a ACC championship team, an ACC champion represented in 3 years in a row, pretty much in terms of the championships and being in a championship game. Murph, I think that says a lot, and I think that we have to let that go in terms of saying that they are solely a basketball conference anymore.
Yeah, that's over with. That whole narrative is over with and done. FSU's been too good lately. Clemson is going to be seemingly at the top of the charts for the next couple of years. Just as a conference, I mean, you could argue maybe top four. I mean, depending on where you want to put the big, the Pac-12 and maybe the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten still does have Ohio State and does have Michigan State. The Pac-12 has Stanford and Oregon, USC. But I think right now, I mean, you could, any which way, I mean, if you want to leave SEC and one, I'm fine with that. And then, you know, I think 2, 3, and 4, you can interchange anywhere. But I think the ACC is definitely in the conversation.
No, it's definitely. Derrick Henry, is he more or less the next great thing, or is he the next Eddie Lacy?
Well, Eddie Lacy is still, I think the jury's still on him to see what he is. Last year was great. This year started off slow and then had some flashes of brilliance and, you know, kind of came back to reality. So, the whole Packers team in general has been kind of not right. The whole offense, you know, starting with the loss of losing Jordy Nelson early in the beginning of the season, they haven't been right at all. So I'm not going to blame this totally on any Lacy, but he obviously didn't have the year that everyone wanted to have. What it comes down to with Henry is that Henry took a lot of carries in his college career, and running back has the shortest shelf life in the NFL. So Henry is not a guy who's going to be elusive. He's going to be a guy that's going to run through. He's a massive human being. It's just going to be the amount of, you know, hits he takes. How much can he keep it up? If he takes, you know, 20 carries a game, 25 carries a game, he's getting nailed by linebackers and safeties, and his career might be short. So it's just up to him for being a smart running back and learning how to do little things and block when he needs to and catch the balls when he needs to, and then we'll see. I mean, I think his best case scenario is just to have some kind of change of pace back with him in the offense so they're not relying on him, because he carried a heavy load now then, and it's going to be tough to see him have a career in the NFL, you know, a productive past 7, 8 years. I mean, just, there's no way that could happen.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the flip side of it. I mean, look, he ran the ball. I think he ran for like 25 or 35 times. He's run the ball a lot, and you're right. He's not he's an upright runner, and he's going to take a lot of punishment. So the shelf life, clearly already we see that most running backs are done after maybe 5 or 6 years. And, you know, I don't know. Look, if you think about it, Mark Ingram, I think, perhaps maybe turned the corner, if you will, this year for the New Orleans Saints here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy, upcoming Roy Williams, 347-324-5839. But if you look at the shelf life of some of these Alabama running backs, you know, Trent Richardson is a young man that really was a guy that, hands down, I mean, if somebody told me that that young man would not be in the NFL right now, I'd say something is wrong with you. I thought that that young man was definitely a surefire, football player and a running back that would be, you know, right now competing for a spot on a Pro Bowl team. Surprised, and just really, if you look at the history and the track record of the running backs with Alabama, if you look at that as a whole, Murph, do you think a lot of these guys perhaps are overrated? Good college players, but that just don't translate well to the next level?
No, I kind of agree with that. I mean, even their quarterback position, too, they seem to recruit guys who perform very well in college, and then they just not translate to the pros. Their recruiting strength seems to lie with, like, in the trenches, O-line, D-line. I think like the whole defense gets drafted in the NFL, and they always perform. And they've been pretty good with the receivers, too, you know, as of late with Julio Jones and Amari Cooper. But the skill positions outside of receiver have been kind of underwhelming. The quarterback, I mean, AJ McCarron, who's probably the first quarterback in a very long time to do anything in the NFL. And now I agree with Ingram turning the corner. I also agree with what you're saying about Richardson, how I thought he'd be the next big thing. It seems like everyone did. He'd do it all, but it just wasn't there. And, you know, Lacy was, you know, the jury's still out on him. Now Derrick Henry's the next guy up, and it's going to be – I think he's a good player. I think Henry will turn to the NFL. You can't keep size, and he definitely has it, and he's just a big bruising back. And definitely for goal line, you know, short yard situations, he'll be great. And, you know, he does have a burst of speed, so I think he could do some things in the NFL. But if he doesn't pan out, I won't be surprised at all because of just the track record of some of these players recently. Like I said, outside of the defense and outside of some of the receivers, they've not been that great.
Yeah. Let's switch gears momentarily. Breaking news, the Rams are going back to Los Angeles and may be joined by the Chargers as a result of the owner's vote on relocation. The
Chargers. Right now, it just seems that listening, according to Kevin Seifert of NFL Nation, listening to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and the owners tonight, it sure seems as through the league would prefer the Chargers to stay in San Diego and the Raiders to remain in Oakland right now. So the Rams, I think it was some conversation, but right now it seems apparent that the St. Louis Rams are no more. The Rams are returning to L.A., and they will be definitely also, I think the San Diego Chargers have until January. San Diego Chargers may join the Rams, but have until January 16, 27 to agree to a lease terms with the Rams. So if the Chargers decline, the Oakland Raiders, another former NFL tenant, will hook up. But the Rams will begin play in Los Angeles in 2016, but will not be moved into their new Inglewood home until the 2019 season. Murph, the Rams, they were once the Los Angeles Rams. They're going to back to St. Louis. Surprise. I've heard some of the conversation, bantered around. You know, there was a situation when I think Stan Kroenke built an arena in Inglewood, and then the Raiders and Chargers were really working together with the plant on building a stadium in Carson, California. Surprised that the Rams are headed back to L.A.?
It's weird. I'm kind of surprised because you see how good the fan base are for other St. Louis teams, like, you know, the Cardinals and the St. Louis Blues. They're diehard fans. They love the team. They represent them very well. And you'd think that football should just come hand in hand. Like, why not root for a team you finally got? And I guess the sport was not there. And that's just shocking because, you know, all those Midwest, they're known for fan base. On the flip side, the NFL team go to a big market. I mean, the NFL is definitely not hurting for money, and this only helped them, you know, tenfold. The one criticism that we always heard about LA fans is they're not really good fans. They're very fair weather, show up late to games. They're just there for the whole scene, like, you know, all those Laker fans. So I'd hope that, you know, people who live in that area do support this team and are happy to get it back and show them some support and, you know, make it a packed stadium every Sunday whenever they're home. So that's the one thing I'm hoping for.
Here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy, 347-324-5869. I'm kind of surprised because I think they will start participating the 2016 season. The Rams are going back there. I'm just shocked and baffled that the NFL, this is where I say you see the power of the NFL. And I know so many people say, well, soccer runs the world. I have no doubt about that. But let's not sleep and sneeze at the fact is what the NFL has been able to do in terms of making treasure troves of money. When you think L.A., one of the biggest media markets in the world, they did not have a football team, L.A., and the NFL was still able to profit. And we're talking about maybe 20-some-odd years, maybe even more than that, where the NFL has not been in Los Angeles. And now to have a team back in Los Angeles, phew, I just think that clearly, you know, there's been so many things spoken about, the hiccup with the concussions, but this is big for the league, Murph. This is really, really big for the NFL. It's going to really bring in even more money. And what's the saying? The rich get richer. Murph, the league, and you got to say under Goodell's watch, the league has gone to a point where, you know, it's report now that, I think the NFL, according to Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com, the extra $100 million that has been supposedly offered to St. Louis in order to get a stadium deal done there, that money, which was never offered to St. Louis, has been offered to San Diego. So basically, I think what's taking place is that the NFL has granted an additional $100 million in assistance in the event there's a potential solution that could be there to be placed before the voters. So really, the NFL wants the Chargers to stay in San Diego and is throwing $100 million into the equation to work things out. Murph, at this point, how beneficial would it be for the league to have the Chargers remain in San Diego, the Oakland Raiders to remain in Oakland, now that you have a team in the Rams coming back to L.A.?
Well, I would leave the Chargers in San Diego. From what I've heard and read and watched, the Charger fans in San Diego actually are they're pretty optimistic. A lot of things in their city to keep them there. I haven't really heard the same about St. Louis or Oakland. You know, the Oakland Raiders also did play in L.A. as well. So I'd have no problem with two L.A. teams. I mean, there's two New York teams now. Two L.A. teams wouldn't really matter. I'm sure if you had to, you know, put a second team in Chicago or, you know, somewhere else in the big city, you know, down in Texas somewhere, Houston, they could handle it. So I'm not, you know, I don't think L.A. Couldn't handle that problem. So I would be okay with the Raiders going back there, but I think, you know, leaving San Diego there is fine. I'm not sure if Oakland is, like, you know, a big draw of a city, and, you know, the whole state is a mess, the whole stadium, too. They can't play in the Coliseum. It's just a joke that an NFL team is playing inside of a baseball stadium. It just doesn't make any sense. And the league is, you know, they're not shy about wanting to make the most money as possible. I mean, we've seen all these bad situations happen, like you said before, with the concussions and all the other scandals with either Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, all those things, and nothing ever seems to hurt the NFL, and nothing ever, you know, damages the shield whatsoever, and it just keeps prospering. So moving another team to L.A., I think, is still their goal, and the Raiders make more sense to me than the Chargers.
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely. I think the L.A. is a lot better. State of California, NFL is better if you can now have the L.A. market as well as Northern and Southern California all pretty much taken care of. Let's switch gears. Another story that's kind of making the rounds. According to Chris Curtis, the producer of WEEI's Dennis and Callahan show in Boston, Massachusetts, the reason for a weekend trip to the hospital, reportedly Chandler Jones went to the hospital this weekend and had a medical emergency. Now Curtis is reporting, citing unnamed police sources, that Chandler Jones, defensive lineman for the Patriots, overdosed on pills Saturday night as an ambulance transported Jones to Norwood Hospital. Now, there was a report from WEEI initially claiming that the overdose happened at Rob Gronkowski's his teammate's house. The tweet has now been deleted and replaced by a new one that reiterates the overdose report, but that does not say where it occurred. This is kind of weird, and I mean, it's unfortunate, and thankfully, hopefully, this young man is able to recover. But, Murph, the Patriots are going to play a game this weekend. Chandler Jones, one of their outstanding defensive linemen. What do you make of this story here and in the situation and the nature of a reported drug overdose?
Well, the first thought is that it's, you know, it is true. It definitely hurts the Patriots because Chandler Jones is one of their most impactful players. The next thing I think of is it's strange because the Belichick coach team, you don't see many issues. Really, outside of the whole Aaron Hernandez, you know, incident years back, they've been pretty clean, pretty quiet out of the media, and that's the way they like it there. Then you hear the name Gronkowski linked to it, and you want to think, like, yeah, he's the party boy, this and that, but everyone knows that Gronk is a good-natured guy, and he's a good family man, and everyone seems to like him, and yeah, he likes to have a good time. He's like a big, giant kid. He's a teddy bear, but he would never, you know, at least to most fans or people who watch the sport would never think he would do something to this extent. And the same goes for Chandler Jones. So, I mean, I would like to see more details before I say anything more on the matter, because I don't want to start saying, you know, Gronk did this, he's a bad influence, because I don't think he is. I truly don't. As much as I dislike the Patriots, I don't think Gronk is that kind of guy. I don't think Chandler Jones is either. But it's, you know, he is a party animal, so maybe some questions do arise, but I definitely would like to see more details.
Yeah, and I mean, again, just still the timing of this whole situation, and thankfully he's okay. But, I mean, again, you know, with the Patriots already banged up and dealing with some injuries, now inevitably you're going to possibly be without Chandler Jones, at least for this weekend, and could possibly face a upcoming suspension based upon that. Here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy. Don't forget, you can catch us every Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on SiriusXM channel, SiriusXM NBA Radio channel 207 XM 86. Fife Dawg from A Tribe Called Quest will be back in the studio with us, and should be really interested. Murph, what do you take and what do you make of the playoffs thus far?
Well, I picked all four away teams to win, and all four did. So, I mean, they all were the teams with the better quarterbacks. you had Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Alex Smith, and Ben Roethlisberger, and I trust the guys with the playoff experience and Super Bowl rings, so I'm not totally surprised. However, I was surprised that two of the games seemed to, you know, those two endings are unbelievable, and it looked like the better team was going to lose. In a way, I'm kind of happy those games ended the way they did, because I think, you know, having the Bengals team without a Dalton, who knows who's going to play, they would struggle in the next round, and the same goes for, I think, the Vikings. You know, mm-hmm. the Vikings team seems to just handcuff them, not really wanting to do anything in that game. Like, they want to be a game manager of all game managers, at the level of like what Alex Smith does. And I think to have a team like the Seahawks a little bit more dangerous, and let's be honest, too, those conditions to play in were just horrendous. So I think having
a Seahawks team... Let's switch gears. Murphy, we got a gentleman on the line with us that knows a thing or two about playing in those type of conditions, playing in big games, outstanding NFL player. We had the pleasure to have him on a few years back. The legendary one, Roy Williams, joins us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Roy, good evening. Gerald Brown and Eddie Murphy. Not that Eddie Murphy. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us. Did we bring him up? I'm sorry. Roy, can you hear us now?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay. Thanks, Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy. Not that Eddie Murphy. Thanks again for joining us this evening.
Nah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Roy, we had breaking news in regards to the St. Louis Rams are moving back to L.A., and now I think the shuffle begins, where it's possibly the NFL, there are reports that the NFL would like to have the Raiders stay in Oakland and the Chargers stay in San Diego. Just in your opinion, talk about just how much stronger this makes the NFL as a league, now having a franchise back in one of the major media markets in Los Angeles.
I honestly don't. I really believe in my heart that, I mean, yes, it's good for the NFL and LA to have it, but there's so much celebrity and star power in California. I don't even think they would even care about having a football team there. I mean, literally, come on. I mean,
but it's like New York, Roy, because, I mean, think about New York. You go to the Knicks games. You can go to the football games. You know, if stars want to go out to these certain places so they can be in the mix. The Lakers are not the Lakers anymore. I mean, you could go to the Clippers game, but the Lakers are not the Lakers of old. So, I mean, it's another added attraction.
And honestly, but Laker games are just who's at the game. People are just looking to see who's sitting courtside. I mean, they don't care about the game. They just want to see who's sitting courtside. So, I mean, it's L.A. I mean, it's celebrity. You know, what celebrity is going to be at the game? I mean, hell, it's the St. Louis Rams, really? I mean, no disrespect, but, I mean, they haven't had some good seasons, you know, in the past couple of years. So, I mean, it's not like they get the city of L.A. is getting an upgrade in a football team.
Well, we're on the same sentiment. Now, if you were in charge of, say, what's going to happen to the San Diego Chargers or what's going to happen to the Oakland Raiders, what would you do in this scenario if you don't want to go to L.A.?
If I was to have to pick a team, I would probably go with I don't know. It's tough. I mean, because San Diego would probably be the better team because they just have a better team. So
would you keep them in their respective cities, or do you think it's too far down that path that you can't do that anymore?
I don't even see why San Diego would want to leave. I don't get it. I don't understand what makes them want to leave San Diego. I mean, they are in a great they have a great fan base, one, and then they have the best weather right there in San Diego. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, when we did training camp in Oxnard, we used to take the train down to San Diego and play them. I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's a head scratcher, but again, you know, there's certain things where I guess maybe perhaps they want the city to fund in terms of renovations to the MRF, and yet maybe the city's turning around and say, you know what, you got to get private funding. I want to get Roy. Let's go on to the football field, and you know, this week, you know, we've had so much foolishness that goes on in the NFL, and one of the things, I'm a diehard Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, and I'm still scratching my head on the move, and I can't make sense of it. But I saw something similar in a situation, not of that, but with Tony Dungy. You take a downtrodden team, and you build them up, you build them up. You just can't get them. You reach it to a point where you can't go any further. Are we looking at that situation kind of play out with what your former head coach and Marvin Lewis and the Cincinnati Bengals?
You know, I love Coach Lewis. You know, he's always been on the bubble with the Brown family. You know, heck, if he didn't win 10 games this season or get close, I mean, or make the playoffs or have a winning season, you know, we hear, oh, he's going to get fired. You know, and he's always, you know, when he's on that bubble, he always wins enough, you know, and it's, I think he's a coach, Lewis is a great coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, he knows his temperament of his team. I mean, they made some bonehead plays last weekend, of course, but, I mean, that's the Bengals, you know, they do some stupid things at times, you know, that shoot themselves in the foot and make them lose playoff games. I mean, hence to last week. But that's not, I mean, it comes to a point, it's like, you know what, a coach can only do so much. A man, when you're a man, you have to look yourself in the mirror. You have to make the right decisions to help yourself and your team. I mean, and that wasn't the case last week. And coach can't control any of that, you know. I mean, it's an emotional game, and you have to be able to control your emotions, which, you know, some of the players didn't. And that shouldn't be on the coach. You know, that shouldn't be on the coach.
I totally agree with you. Roy Williams joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. I said, honestly, you know, it's one thing that, first of all, flip side, as I mentioned, Lovie Smith gets fired after, you know, basically 2 years on the job trying to, you know, clean up a lot of the mess that Greg Schiano put in place. And we're seeing coaches not giving, you know, Jim Tom Sewell out in San Francisco. You know, guys are not given enough time to sort of implement a system, and it's almost going back to how, I guess, the NFL views college quarterbacks. Coming in, a rookie quarterback, you need to see instant success, when there were years prior where you would have a guy, I like, God rest his soul, Steve McNair, Aaron Rodgers, guys that were able to sit for a couple of years and learn a pro system. And I just look at this whole situation with Marvin Lewis. If you think about it, none of the stuff that Vontaze Burfict nor the Pac-Man Adam Jones situation that transpired would have ever came up if Jeremy Hill would have just held on to the football. And that's the sad thing about it. And I think that clearly, look, Marvin Lewis is right up there with Bill Belichick. He's done a tremendous job. And I think that anybody that calls for that man's job needs to really understand what the Bengals used to be like before he got there. And it's just very, very sad, because to get that close, and it just seems like they, like you said before, you know, they are the Bengals. It's when you have a losing culture, it's so difficult to sort of undo instantly.
Yeah, but my coach has been there a long time, so you know, as far as the whole instantly comment, I mean, he's been there for a while. He was there when I first entered the league in what, 2002. I mean, but I feel that, you know, he's had some hurdles to jump through, and he's done a great job with what he's had, you know.
Absolutely.
And, so, I mean, I give much props and kudos to Coach Lewis, I mean, because, I mean, the best way Coach Zimmer, Mike, when I was there, he was like, you know what, we got a bunch of guys that nobody wanted, you know. And
right.
But you guys are all here, and we made it work, you know. I mean, the Bengals aren't no little, you know, pushover team. I mean, they compete. You know, their defense is solid. And, you know, their offense before, you know, Andy went down, I mean, they were clicking, you know. So it's unfortunate that, you know, he broke his finger. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure the Bengals will be back next year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, him and Bill Belichick are the longest tenured coaches with one team. And, I mean, to see what he has done compared to Belichick, you know, Marvin Lewis basically rebuilt that team and that franchise not once but twice, from the Carson Palmer, Chad Ochocinco situation to now A.J. Green and Andy Dalton. Enough credit, a lot of credit needs to be given to him. But it's just an unfortunate situation to happen where Hill fumbles, and then we have the whole Vontaze Burfict situation. And I think really the court of public opinion perhaps persuaded the NFL to even lay out a 3-game suspension for Vontaze Burfict, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not fun to be fined. Trust. I know. I mean, it's been a one game, and I felt that in my checkbook. So I mean, it's not fun. I mean, I just wish he could have been a little smarter on that mishap play. But I mean, it's like, dude, you're already on the bubble with the team because you've been getting fined the last couple of years, and you just keep repeatedly shooting yourself in the foot and your team, and you. Like, you shouldn't do that, you know what I'm saying? Because at one point, I mean, at some point, the teams are like, you know what, you're more of a hassle than a, you know, an asset, you know, and they're gonna get rid of you.
Right. Now, Roy, to stay on that same subject, and you've covered plenty of tight ends, receivers in your day. Now, obviously, Burfict has a track record of doing certain plays like this and being a dirty player. But in that bang-bang play where Brown becomes, you know, what they call a defensive receiver, what could you do as a DB or as a linebacker to not, you know, run into a player like that? I mean, in today's NFL, they're so quick to throw a flag and find guys. I mean, are you changing the way you play if you're a DB today? Like, what can you even hit a guy anymore when the ball, you know, tips off his hands and right past him? Like, what could you do?
No, you can't hit anybody anymore, man. And honestly, the NFL is making it so catered to the offense that, I mean, the best way I can describe it, especially after, you know, they had to name that horse collar tackle after me and, you know, blah, whatever. It's like you have a beware dog sign on your door, and you train your dog to attack anybody that's not family. And then once somebody comes in and that dog attacks them, and then you reprimand the dog for doing his job. That's like us out on the football field when you're on defense. We're out there to take people's head off. I grew up on Ronnie Lott, Steve Atwater, Jack Tatum, John Lynch, Darren Woodson, all those guys. And they led with their forearms, they led with their head. Whatever they had to do to bring you down, they brought you down. And that's what I grew up on. And now the league is regulating all these, the way you can tackle, and it's like you're taking the aggressiveness away from the game. And, I mean, now it's more, you know, it's more of a soft league, per se, you know, because you can't be as aggressive as I was, the guys I grew up on. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Roy Williams joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Roy, let's look at the divisional round as we move there. You have the Chiefs, the Patriots. You have the Packers and the Arizona Cardinals. The Patriots and the Packers, the Cardinals are the home teams, as well as Denver and Pittsburgh, and then you have the Carolina Panthers and the Seattle Seahawks. Of these games that were basically in the divisional round, where do you see the best upset possible in these matchups? Which game provides perhaps the best possible upset?
Seattle's going to Carolina, right?
Correct. Seattle's going to Carolina.
I like that upset.
Really?
I like that one. I like that one. The Chiefs. Are the Chiefs playing the Broncos or the Patriots?
The Chiefs are playing the Patriots in Foxborough.
Yeah. I like that one.
The Chiefs? Chiefs and the Patriots?
I like the Chiefs. But, it's Bill Belichick. I got that, but, I mean, it's one of those things when teams are just clicking at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm so still hurt for Coach Zimmer and Vikings. I mean, their kicker got done. Like I literally was on the couch, and, I mean, I'm sitting next to my girl, and she's, like, on her iPad or something, and dude kicks it and missing out, and I scream like, no! And she's like, what happened? I was like, this fool missed a chip shot. Like, you don't, Oh my goodness. So, anyways, I like the.
The Chiefs.
Seattle over Carol. I like Seattle over the Panthers and the Chiefs over the Pats. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Roy Williams joining us. Go ahead, Murph. I'm sorry.
One question I had about before talking about the coaches is we had a couple of vacancies. You know, Gerald Bucks, the wide open job there. Giants, Eagles.
Watch your mouth. Watch your mouth. Don't say nothing.
Yeah. No, but if you had to leave one of these teams, what do you think is the best job to take right now in terms of either a roster or you think it's the best model franchise in terms of the front office? What team do you think is the best open job right now in the NFL?
Gosh. That's tough, man. It really is. I would say Tampa Bay because they're a young team. They're playing well. You know, I don't know what happened, but they started off pretty decent, you know, and you know, they got some young dogs on that team. For a coach to come in and coach them, I mean, I think that'd be I think that can be something special. Man, I don't know about 49ers, man. Their defense is salty, but I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with Kaepernick. I truly don't know what's going to happen with him, man. And I would say 49ers, but I'm not believing in Kaepernick right now, man. He's I don't know what's going on. He really needs to do a self-evaluation check and, you know, get his stuff back together, back into his old form.
Yeah. I'd say the Giants, but I thought you would probably say the Giants. But you know what? How interesting would this be? Do you think that the 49ers would love to have a do-over when they jettisoned Alex Smith out of town, ends up in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Alex Smith all of a sudden is looking like a world beater. And the way he's playing, I mean, you know, they're clearly – I don't know if you could say perhaps Jamaal Charles and the pressure to sort of run the ball X amount of times really took away from mm-hmm. Alex Smith being able to develop and evolve into this quarterback he's able to win in the playoffs and stuff. Roy, before we let you get on out of here, what is Roy Williams doing these days? I mean, besides sitting back, relaxing, what is Roy Williams doing these days? And what keeps Roy Williams interested?
I have two daughters, so my kids keep me busy.
Okay.
And I'm living in Oklahoma. I own a security company, actually. And
okay.
We do corporate executive protection, unarmed guards, for a lot of we're heavily in the oil and gas industry. We've been very, very blessed and very fortunate. I mean, I'm thanking God now because we just found out we got one of the bigger clients here in Oklahoma. And we started in 2013. We started building our first client January 1 of 2013, and we started off with probably about eight guards, and now we're fast forward to now we're up to 700 employees. We operate in 10 states. We've been very fortunate and very blessed. So that's what keeps me pretty occupied. Dealing with 700 different personalities is
Roy, you don't have to tell us, boy. I tell you this, Roy, the city of Oklahoma City might need your security company pretty soon. So keep your number on speed dial because they might need you to provide security to make sure Kevin Durant never leaves Oklahoma City at the tail end of this NBA season.
Dude, that's going to be interesting in itself. I mean, him and Russell, you know. If we can't afford to lose KD and Russell, not to say we can't handle that.
What would it be? How devastating? You know, I look at an organization, and granted, I don't know, maybe you could probably say they're on the same level, but, you know, a great friend, you know, whose family, one executive producer, Penny Hardaway, and I talked to Penny about this a while ago in terms of when his decision, first Shaq left the Magic, and then his decision to leave and go to Phoenix, and then you had this sort of void of a franchise that theoretically never were able to recover. And, yes, Dwight Howard comes there, they take him to the NBA Finals. And yet, I was just in Orlando last week to see that organization and that franchise still searching to find that sort of franchise guy. How big of a loss would it be if they lose Durant this year and inevitably Russell's going to be a free agent, I believe, in another year or so? How big of a hit would it be for Oklahoma City to lose either one of those guys, if not both?
Oklahoma would probably be a ghost town. We might have we might as well set us back in time and pull out the horses and carriages, because we're going to be struggling if we lose both of them. It'd set us back. It really would. Just think about Kevin Durant and his shooting ability and ball skills. And then Russell, the way he commands the court. If we were to lose both of them, it'd set us back. It'd be like Orlando.
Wow. It'd definitely be something. But listen,
Roy.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just did one more thing. So next year, things will look better for the Sooners, and it was a tough loss this year.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm serious. It sucks that freaking Clemson lost last night, because I really thought they were going to, give it to them, and they had a couple of blown plays, and I'm just like, damn, it's one or two plays in the game that will really change everything. And that happened to Clemson. And as far as OU, I'm happy that we were able to, get in there and play in the Orange Bowl, and we got our butts handed to us. Hearing our guys talking noise and doing things that they shouldn't be doing. Just go play the game, let your pads do the talking. We got our butts handed to us, out in Clemson, and the better team won that night, and hopefully my team, we can, get back in it next season. But, we had a hell of a run, but we just didn't finish.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. And, it just goes to show how difficult it is for, franchises, but, schools to be able to rise above. I think one thing that Clemson might have showed, if anything, from the win over your OU team, as well as the now loss to the Alabama Crimson Tide, we can no longer say the ACC is just a basketball conference anymore. And I think 3 years in a row they have had a representative in the championship game. It says a lot. Roy, listen, really, really appreciate you jumping on the line with us. We got to get you on our NBA show, man. We got to get you on SiriusXM NBA, because we got to find out. You got to give us the 411, what's going on with KD and Russell as we progress in this season, because that's going to be the real talk. So we got to figure out, because you got the security. I'm sure you probably got some listening devices and stuff that you got to be able to find out what's the 411.
Nah, man, we don't do anything with the Thunder. But, we'll see. I love sitting back and just looking and supporting people's decision. Yes, I would love him to stay, but at the same time, too, there's a lot of other key factors. Kobe's leaving L.A., There was a picture tweeted of Kobe and Kevin, talking. Man, hell, maybe he might have been, hey, come take over the reins, This is your city, to have it. But he's from the D.C. area. He wants to be closer to the Redskins and rooting on his team and being close to his family. So, there's a lot of what ifs. And then Russell, when he comes up, he's from Southern Cal. So, it's just one of those, is LA gonna swoop up our two stars? Who knows? Until they need them, because I like the Lakers, and goddamn, they struggling right now.
Roy, if you ever go sit courtside at the Staples Center, bring a pair of sneakers because you might be able to suit up.
Nah, buddy, I can't. Boy, please, nah. I can't play basketball. Hell, the last time I played basketball in high school was my freshman year, and I didn't last long because within 20 seconds I had 3 fouls. Way too aggressive.
Oh, man. Listen, Roy, really, really appreciate you jumping on the line. Best wishes with everything that you got going on, and definitely look forward to talking down the line, especially love to have you on the NBA show. Definitely talk with Tanika and see if we can set that up and really pick your brain. Like you said, what's going on with the Thunder as well as your Lakers.
All right. Appreciate you.
All right. Anytime. Thanks a lot, Roy.
All right, guys.
Roy Williams joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Outstanding former NFL football player and a guy that provides a ton of insight on everything associated with the NFL. I want to react to some of the stuff that Roy mentioned about Murph in terms about, you know, look, we look at what has transpired with Marvin Lewis, and like, you know, Roy said, he played under Marvin Lewis. Murph, are you starting to get the feeling that perhaps it's time for, you know, Marvin Lewis to move on?
Yeah, from his tone of his voice, I heard that he might have thought it's time to move on, and he's done, you know, enough, or that he had, but he hasn't gone above and beyond. It sounded like he did love, you know, back then was their defensive coordinator. Mike Zimmer is now the coach of the Vikings. Seemed like he loved him because he's obviously rooting for the Vikings, like he said. You know, like you mentioned, too, like he has this, you know, the longest tenure, Marvin Lewis, he's up there with Belichick, and before Coughlin got fired by the Giants, he's up there with them. And, you know, they haven't really done anything besides just make the playoffs. So there comes a time and a place where other coaches who have done more can get fired. I think it's time for him to go. I felt that, you know, look, can you fire him now? Probably not, because you made it to a game where you probably should have won. You have a lot of talent. You have Dalton making every year of his career. You have a lot of talent basically everywhere else in the field. So I think it's kind of, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face and then go take the franchise a couple steps back. But, you know, could they have moved him a couple years ago? I think they probably should have.
Yeah, I think that, I think, you know what, it makes a lot of sense to keep him. And
sure.
I think
right now,
I just think that, you know what, the body of work he has provided, and this is what I said before, Murph, here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Eddie Murphy, 347-324-5839. I remember what the Bengals were like before he got there. You know, it was such a bad culture from guys like Carl Pickens, the wide receiver who didn't want to be there. It was a cheap organization. I can't think of the other running back who ended up going to New England and winning and having a ton of success, but they didn't have a culture. They had a culture, a nasty, negative culture. And for that man to come in and clean that culture up, I said it speaks volumes. And then to see, this is the organization, and that's what I said before, when you have organizations that have nothing but a history of just futility, it's very difficult for it to happen overnight. So the first playoff game, home playoff game, I believe it was against the Steelers, first pass of the game, offensive play, first pass of the game. and it's not a laughing matter. But Carson Palmer throws a pass down the sidelines. On the pass, he tears his ACL. First play of the game. And you go back, and this is an organization, you know, I don't believe the last couple of years. Look, Houston had their number. Houston was a bad matchup for them. And if you look at last year, their number one wide receiver, A.J. Green, was not available. You know, so they played with Mohamed Sanu being their number one option. They were still trying to infuse Giovanni Bernard to be the number one guy. They just couldn't have – they didn't have – they had futility on the offensive side of the ball. Now, if you think about it now, Murph, can you start saying that maybe A.J. McCarron, you might want to hold on to him because he might just be better than Andy Dalton for what they're doing in Cincinnati. Or do you still believe that Andy Dalton is clearly their franchise quarterback? Murph? I mean, is he like the franchise quarterback, Murph? I didn't know if you heard me and stuff like that, but is he the franchise quarterback?
Absolutely. I mean, I believe he's made the playoffs every year of his career. The only reason why he, wasn't playing this game because of a thumb injury. Who knows what the outcome would have been if he was healthy? I honestly think Dalton's injury was probably the most significant injury of the NFL season because I did feel the Bengals were a real threat to at least make the Super Bowl if they're fully healthy, just based on their talent alone. And, nothing against A.J. McCarron. He could go on somewhere else and be a decent quarterback, but I don't think he's right now on games. He's anywhere near the level of Andy Dalton. And what happened, I thought the Steelers actually were all over them. I'm surprised it was as close to
going
the right direction.
Let's go ahead and bring on the phone line. There's a guy that we have on the NBA side with us, Murph, David Kane, joining us. David Kane. Do we have David Kane? David Kane?
Hello, guys. How you doing?
What's going on, Mr. Kane? What's going on? I thought we had a little round of applause for you, but still in awe. We just had former safety Roy Williams on with us, and we were talking about some of the things where, in terms of the NFL profiting from having a team in L.A. and how strong the league has gotten. There goes the thing there.
Better late than never.
But, Dave, I want to ask you this from a flip side of that. Do you think the NBA could profit if they didn't have a team, let's just say, all right, we don't need to give David Kane too much of applause. We need to stop that.
Wow, okay. I'm feeling the love.
Okay, that's enough. Okay, you can sit down. Dave, do you think the NFL, just like we've seen with the NFL, they're now moving back to L.A., they're going to have the Rams in L.A., do you think that if we had a situation in the NBA, on the NBA side, would the NBA be able to succeed or be able to still continue to operate at a plus if they didn't have a franchise in such a major city a la like New York or L.A.?
I believe they could, but it wouldn't be smart business. I mean, obviously, it helps to have those teams in those markets. I don't think one team maybe leaving the market would maybe damage the whole brand, but it's definitely an advantage of having teams there.
Yeah, it's just been one of those things there. What do you think of just the whole situation in Cincinnati and how you tweeted out to me or texted me the other night, same old Bengals. What are your thoughts on just the whole situation and what you saw that night?
I mean, just a bad play at a bad time. I mean, I don't know, man. It was a chippy game, the bad blood between them. You just got to control your emotions. I think was Burdick, if I'm pronouncing his name right, I think
Burdick.
I think he just lost his. I can't say he lost his cool. He made a bad play, supposedly a bad hit. And I don't know if I even agree with the call on Pac-Man, because even without that, it's still a 50-yard field goal. And, from what I gathered, like Joey Porter wasn't even supposed to be the coach. I guess, I don't know, if a player gets hurt, his position coach is supposed to come out. Did I hear that right?
No. Yeah, Murph, if you look at it, Murph, we look at this whole situation, and I said that, were the Bengals sort of guilty by association? Like, they could have pretty much went into the game knowing that this game was a chippy one prior that they had played. Did you just seem the fact is that whatever the Bengals did wrong, they would not be given the benefit of the doubt?
Well, the league knew going into the games that it wasn't going to be this way. I believe both teams were actually given a memo. So the league kind of already had their eyes on it. And when you have players like that, Perfect has been fined, I think, like five or more times already in his very short NFL career. I mean, I think it's just a wall that something will to happen. You know, for me personally, the hit that he put on, it doesn't really make the needle tick for me, because I think that's the game. It's a bang bang play. You know, has he done dirty stuff in the past? Sure, but I think when I don't get the term defenseless receiver because of the guy, the ball tipping off his hand, and what he's supposed to do, slow down and not hit him, like, it's impossible. As for the Joey Porter stuff, I mean, I think he's out of line. That guy's been a hothead his whole career, and he's slow as a coach. I think stepping onto the field is wrong. I think at the minute a coach comes on the field, they should just get flagged or whatever, and Porter should be fine, and I believe he was. So I think they definitely crossed the line with that, and I think they kind of provoke the Bengals players to react, like that's what Pac-Man did. So I think both teams are wrong, and the NFL knew ahead of time it was going to be a very chippy game, and it was. So they got what was coming to them.
Yeah, but one thing that nobody's really talking about, and Dave and Murph, I had said this before. If Jeremy Hill doesn't fumble the ball, we might have not even come to that conclusion. We might have been in a situation that perhaps we would not even be discussing this. I'm having a hard time seeing this, why there is such a public outcry, if you whatever, in terms of Burfict. But Dave, if he doesn't fumble that ball, and Jeremy Hill, are we even having this discussion? Could the Bengals have possibly moved on?
I totally agree. I actually was just getting ready to say that. I'm with you. I don't even know why it's such a big controversy, but I think people have forgotten about the fumble. And I think people forgot about the great play he made for the interception, which should have pretty much sealed the game. So,
exactly.
I totally agree with you with that.
Yeah, it's one of those things here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. David King hanging out with us, Gerald Brown. Let's go through some of these games also. Again, we saw that the Chiefs, they had a situation. Murph, are the Chiefs the real deal with Alex Smith?
Still this week. So, I mean, the real deal is a playoff team, but as a Super Bowl contender, they're not.
Yeah. If you look at the Chiefs and if you look at what they've been able to do, Dave, are you really buying them that they could possibly upset the New England Patriots now?
Well, I would give them a chance based on just the last time we've seen New England. I mean, I know New England's pedigree and history, and sometimes I think when we talk sports, a lot of times we don't look at what our eyes are telling us and we just go on, like, past history. But I believe it was the last two or three weeks New England didn't look that great. When KC won 11 in a row, so technically they should get the respect of being able to contend, but I guess for some reason we refuse to kind of bend off our ways of thinking sometimes.
Yeah, I think that I think the Chiefs have a good shot, and I think the next thing is, I look at two teams that played in Wild Card Weekend in terms of the Houston Texans, who lost their game, and then which I thought you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, who actually won that game. And what's so interesting, guys, about that situation, I really believe that the Houston Texans loss really works in the favor of a guy like Arian Foster, because you need a bona fide back out there, especially if you're struggling at the quarterback position. While on the flip side of that, I look at the Kansas City Chiefs without Jamaal Charles, lost to an ACL injury, being able to now once again utilize Jeremy Maclin, who's also out possibly for this upcoming week. But Jeremy Maclin and this offense, we see that Alex Smith is not considered, quote-unquote, a game manager. Dave, if you look at both of these situations, which running back do you think has the best chance of coming back to his team next year?
I think Arian Foster, because I think he's needed more. I mean, Jamaal, for them to win 11 in a row, I forgot which game Charles went out. I know how valuable he is, but if you can kind of continue humming along like that without a play, you might want to explore what his value might be and see if you can fill another position. I'm sure they could probably use another wide receiver. But I think I think they have a chance. I forgot that if Mac was out, then I think that's going to be tough for them, too.
Yeah. Murph, which one do you think has the best chance of coming back?
That's tough because, I mean, you could look at Foster's career and you could already see signs of him declining. He's a little bit older than Jamal Charles, but this is already the second ACL injury for Jamal Charles. So coming back from two devastating knee injuries is very tough. I think Charles is a better player. He's a younger player. But, I mean, if I had a pick, I mean, it's hard. But I'll take Charles just because of his age. I think he just has a little more left in the tank. But, I mean, neither in the future is looking too great after a lot, you know, the countless injuries they both had.
Yeah. It's just, I think you probably have a situation that perhaps maybe they could come back and really have some. I want to go into a little basketball, switch gears momentarily, go into a little basketball. Dave, we're sitting back, and it seems apparent that once again the San Antonio Spurs, I think they won 9 games in a row, if I'm not mistaken. They're on their way to possibly, they're going to win 10 in a row as they're up with 30 seconds left in a game over the Detroit Pistons. You look at what they have been able to do. The Clippers have been able to win 9 in a row. Which one of these win streaks do you really, really – which one of these real win streaks are really showing us what this team – which team is really basically the real deal based upon their winning streak?
Well, obviously between the two teams, I feel San Antonio is the better team, more established, whatever superlatives you want to use. But I would say the most impressive out of the two has to be the Clippers. I mean, the win 9 in a row with Blake Griffin going down, I think that one is actually more impressive, even though I believe San Antonio is the better team.
Yeah. Murph, if you look at that situation, which one has been the most impressive?
I just go with the Spurs because they're down at home. I mean, really, their only almost slip-up was just the one-point victory over the Knicks the other night. I think when you defend your home court like that, it just shows what could happen in the playoffs. And they should have basically home court throughout. And if you know they have home, you know, you have the game advantage in the small series, I think that can go a long way and really challenge the Warriors for the top spot in the West. So I think the Spurs showing their dominance is a really good sign for them, and it's a really scary sign for the rest of the teams in the West and the NBA for that matter.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I'm more impressed with what the San Antonio Spurs have been able to do. I think what we've seen what the Clippers have been able to do when they lost Chris Paul and Blake and them. And then the quality of the teams that they have beaten is, you know, they went to overtime a game against the New Orleans Pelicans who were out without Anthony Davis. I'm a little on the fence in terms of really saying that the Clippers and their 9-game winning streak, the strength of it is just the timing of the schedule, and they're beating up on some bad teams there. Dave and Murph, your thoughts before we move in a different direction. Carmelo Anthony, along with Alex Ovechkin, a hockey player, told reporters that I think it's Carmelo Anthony told reporters that he's also purchased some tickets for this Powerball, which is actually $1.5 billion. Some people said that they would be mad if either one of those guys won, some of these athletes won the Powerball. Do you have a problem with these guys playing Powerball, Dave?
Nah, I don't have no problem with it. I mean, they got money, but they don't got that type of money. So, I mean, and hey, man, they lucky enough to win, more power to them, man.
Yeah, Murph, do you have a problem with that?
No, not at all. I mean, it's $2 to buy a Powerball ticket, and the odds of them winning, it's like almost $300 million, one of $300 million. I mean, they're not going to win it if they do. Exactly, they're lucky and they deserve all the money they'll get. So, but I'm not going to hold my breath. Anyone who has any fake outrage toward that's just a pure idiot.
Yeah, here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, David Kane, Eddie Murphy, 347-324-5839. The Cavaliers did a move, obviously, to save on luxury tax penalties, and kudos to David Griffin really being able to make this move as the Cavs traded Joe Harris to the Orlando Magic on Tuesday. That could save the Cavs, who are paced to have the second highest payroll in league history, nearly $3 million in luxury tax penalties. Now, what the Cavs sent to Orlando, they sent Harris, cash considerations, the Sacramento Kings, 27 protected second-round pick, to the Magic in exchange for Portland Trailblazers protected 2020 second round pick. Murph and Kane, this is clearly Dave first. This is clearly just a move to, like they said before, save cap space and save a luxury tax bill of closing in on $3 million. Smart move by this team, inevitably, to make sure that, again, they try to do certain things to make sure that possibly they're not having any luxury tax.
I think it's a smart move. I mean, to save, you know, because I think the main thing, if I'm not mistaken, with that tax bill is not to be a repeat offender. I think that's when the penalties really kick in. So, I mean, they gave up a player who wasn't going to play. And I think, you know, they're deep at guard. And I think with the addition of the kid Cunningham, who's been pretty good, made the kid Harris real expendable. So they really gave up a non-rotational player to save them from those penalties. So I don't think that was a great move.
Now, Murph, you know, do you sort of raise an eyebrow if you're the NBA, because now Harris, who's actually underwent successful surgery, moved a bone in his right foot on Tuesday, he's recovering. Expect he's going to miss the rest of the season. And a league source told ESPN.com the Magic plan on waiving Joe Harris. And thus, basically, all they're doing is getting rid of a player that the Cavaliers didn't want. Would you have any concern if you're the NBA and moves like this that are being made?
It's tough to say because Joe Harris is on the NBA Finals roster last year. I mean, the Cavaliers obviously value him enough to keep him that deep in the playoffs. But besides that, I mean, yeah, they're not going to use him. They don't plan on using him. And now that he's hurt. I mean, the Magic, they're pretty deep in the same position, too. And they have a good rotation going on, a lot of young players there. So it doesn't look like they're going to use him either, especially with his injury. The move came down to it just that everyone wants to make sure that they have enough money and they're not in any kind of penalty for when the salary cap keeps increasing year after year, as it will. And that's what just teams want to do. They want the best team to have the most amount of cash as possible. So, I mean, if the league approved it already, I'm sure they did their research and their due diligence. I'm sure there was something, you know, fugazi going on. But like I said, it depends on how much other teams we evaluate Joe Harris right now. I'm sure if his NBA career is over. But it is still strange that he was on the roster for the finals last year. So maybe he is worth something somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I just think they just needed healthy bodies in terms of last year. I don't really put too much stock in the fact is that he was there. I just think that, they needed healthy bodies as much as possible. Dave, we saw the Oklahoma City Thunder recently lose a couple of games that kind of were head scratches, and right now they're in a dogfight, about 3 minutes and 25 seconds left in the game. They're up by 5 on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Is it a situation that, again, this team will start to feel some pressure perhaps come down April and really definitely in the playoffs to win in order to have a strong showing to keep Durant in OKC?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Durant knows what he's working with there. He's playing, you know, if he's not phased playing with Westbrook, which is probably the biggest concern most people would have, then I don't think them making a run, like I always said, they haven't lost in the playoffs healthy since they lost to Miami. So, and I always said, like, I'm a Spurs fan, and I fear them more than I fear the Warriors. So, I think, like, they're kind of under the radar. Like, everybody's under the radar with the Warriors right now. But I'm pretty sure OKC is not a team a lot of people want to see in that postseason.
Yeah. Murph, what do you make of this? Baron Davis has actually signed with a D-League team. He's going to play in a D-League. What do you make of that? And does that really hurt, you know, the league? I mean, can you say this is a – he's expected to sign a contract with a developmental team by Wednesday. He's 36, and he's really been contemplating this movie set for 2 years. Murph, I don't know. What do you make of this move? Is this a feel-good story? I mean, I don't like it at all.
Yeah, well, what I make of it is that, one, Baron Davis is bored, and two, that the NBA D-League wants to try to make a quick buck any way they can, so they figure to get a former, you know, pretty good NBA player to come play for whatever team he's going to. I'm not sure which one it is, in some small city. It'll sell a couple tickets, and they have every right to do that, and Baron Davis has every right to sign there if they think he's worthy of a roster spot. I'm not sure if he is at this point. I mean, he bounced around on our own radio station. He tried to be on SiriusXM for a couple shows, and he couldn't crack that. I'm not sure where his head's at, if he's even going to be prepared for this job. But, you know, if he accomplished this for 2 years ago, he should have tried to join 2 years ago when his body is in better shape. I'm not sure what he's thinking about doing this now. The D-League itself has a lot of, you know, things they need to fix because the league is not being used the way it should be. It should be much, you know, it should be used much more like how the AHL is used for the NHL or the double A, triple A, single A ball is used for baseball. They're not doing a good job with it. So the whole thing, I think, is a joke.
Yeah, and Kane, when we're looking at the NBA, and that Murph brought up, the whole structure where we see in baseball, you have young players are able to go to a farm system, and, you know, we've heard recently that all 31 teams or 32 teams are now getting their own D-League team, and thus you would hope that this would be sort of the answer, the remedy possibly of kids that don't want to go to college, they can go to the D-League, and you further strengthen the product that, let's be honest, has had a lot of issues in the NBA. I have a problem with Baron Davis because, again, the D-League was not set up for these type of situations where you have 35, 36-year-old players coming back wanting to play in a D-League and perhaps taking time and minutes away from a younger player that inevitably possibly could evolve and develop into a player on the next level. Agree or disagree in terms of just looking at this whole situation and possibly saying that this is a PR stunt?
I agree with the fact that, yeah, that I would rather see a young player with that spot trying to earn the opportunity to get in. But I will say this, I don't know if Baron Davis is he supposedly trying to get back in the league or I don't know. But if it was a player that was maybe a team, was signed with a team and they sent them down there just to get ready, I would be more okay with that than just for him to just be coming, I guess, the path he's on right now because I don't know if anyone's really looking to sign him. So, I mean, he's a veteran enough where he could actually just be invited in for a workout before it happened to go this route. So, I kind of agree with you.
Yeah, I just don't think it it just really makes sure. It doesn't make sense at all. It just really doesn't make any sense. And I think it's clearly one of those moves that you could sit back and say that. Guys, before we get off air, I want to get your thoughts on really just, again, so many coach searches. You know, Murph, you're a Giants fan. The Giants, they need a head coach. Is there a guy out there that you would say would be the ideal fit for you to say, I'm happy with this guy coaching the Giants?
Yes, there's three, but none of them are realistic. I think, you know, you hear some of these, like, fake lists people have, and if there are on Nick Saban, who we talked about earlier in the show, and I think he makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure he'll leave Alabama, though. People heard the whisper about the whole Bill Belichick ties he has the Giants organization, but obviously he's not going to go anywhere either, especially when he's a couple games away from winning another Super Bowl. And then the last guy, I think, well, actually, there's two of them, other than John Harbaugh, both seem pretty locked in, one with Michigan, one with the Baltimore Ravens, during my time soon. Those are my favorite options, but none of them really seem to be fit here. I mean, you have the guys, they, you know, the both coordinators, McAdoo and Spagnuolo, who we've interviewed. And I think McAdoo makes the most sense from the standpoint that he had given Eli the two best years of his career as offensive coordinator. So just putting him in a head coach role will keep Eli, who's, you know, throwing, you know, him and Odell Beckham, your two best players, keep them happy and makes it even better all around. So I think that's probably the safest route to go. I'm not sure if everyone's in love with it. The other option in my mind is the Hugh Jackson interview, and there's the defensive coordinator from Carolina and a few other guys. Not really in love with any of them. Doug Marone was on the name. You know, those aren't the guys I want to see as the next Giants head coach. A funny thing that came around the airwaves today in New York is that Tom Coughlin's, you know, going out for interviews with San Francisco and Philadelphia. Well, if he's still coaching and the Giants obviously are not in love with any of the people they've interviewed already, I mean, I would call it, like, you know, they screwed up, bring Coughlin back. Because at this point, what else are you going to do? Obviously, you're not really in love with anyone else. You're letting this guy go to a division rival? I mean, imagine how bad that'd be as him coaching the Eagles and beating you, which you know inevitably will happen. The Giants lose the Eagles twice, make sure he goes and coaches them. So, I mean, I'm not really sure. We'll see what happens. I think Alabama winning was a good thing for the Giants fans. You know, I don't know, maybe throw a blank check at Bill Cowher too while we're at it. So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I think that clearly McAdoo, if you want to keep it in-house and really have a situation where, again, you can have some continuity, but I think perhaps in this situation it was inevitably you needed a new voice. Dave, you're a San Francisco 49ers fan. What type of coach, if not a specific name, but what type of coach does this team really need?
I think they need a veteran coach. I mean, usually I'm all for giving new guys a chance instead of recycling, you know, the same old names all the time. But I kind of think it's more of a veteran team, at least defensively, it feels that way. So I kind of like Coughlin interviewing out there in San Francisco. I think you need somebody that's established. You have a lot of established players already on the team. Like, they're not that good, but it's not like they're rebuilding. So I think that, you know, a strong president like Coughlin might be able to help them. So I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I think somebody, yeah. My beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and again, I think that clearly, you know, right now at this point, you got to strike hit a home run. I think it makes sense to try to keep some continuity. If you're going to keep Dirk Cutter in-house, keep him in there. You're going to have to bring in a veteran defensive coordinator, somebody like a Dom Capers type of caliber, somebody that's going to be able to work with this defense. That was the Achilles heel for this team this past year, so I don't agree with the Lovie Smith situation. I think the defense is a work in progress, but it would make a lot of sense, more importantly, to bring in somebody, a veteran leader, if you're going to hire Dirk Cutter as the head coach. And then Murph, the Cleveland Browns, another team that's mired in futility. What type of coach do they need, Murph?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. They need a coach who... The best situation for this franchise is to make amends with Johnny Manziel somehow and find a coach that he'll love and use him, because I still believe in him. If you look at his game track from this year, he did a pretty good job when he played, and it's a team with literally zero offensive talent. I mean, they didn't have Josh Gordon this year. Their running game was terrible. I mean, you give the guy a couple of pieces, I think he'll be okay. I mean, I think he's in Cleveland, but I really don't know. They have tried everything. I think at that point you need a coach, not an up-and-comer. You need a guy who's going to be there for the long haul and have some kind of talk with the front office, who is not going to fire the coach within a year or two. You have to give him at least 5 years, give him a half a decade, let him do a few drafts, because their draft like record has been atrocious. Look at all their first-round picks. I mean, they don't even play. They just healthy scratch some of them. Guys like Brandon Lee, and they took, and one of the cornerbacks, they don't even play this year. It's just been terrible. So you have to just find continuity with your front office, let the coach do his job, and not fire him after, you know, 16 games, and then just take it from there, because that franchise right now might be one of the worst in sports.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something they need, definitely some type of, you know, consistency. So they're trying once again to get lightning in a bottle. And then the last team, believe it or not, is the Philadelphia Eagles. Dave, what type of coach do they need?
One that can play quarterback. I'm not even sure what they need, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they need a whole boatload of things. I think that if anything, they need to make a decision on who they're going to keep as the running back, and if they're going to do the running back committee, you know, they're going to have to make some major changes in terms of what their plan is going to be, if they're going to have some type of consistency at the running back. And then, you know, if they're going to commit long-term to Sam Bradford to see how things play out, it's a work in progress. But I think clearly the system that, you know, Chip Kelly implemented, it won 10 games. He won a bunch of games, but still in all, it's one of those situations that remains to be seen.
Right.
Murph, what's your bottom line for today?
The one thing I did enjoy, actually, was interviewing Roy Williams, and I think hearing what he said about the whole perfect and how the NFL has gotten kind of soft and has catered towards the offense. And I think that, you know, them doing that has created this whole issue of the late hits, the legal hits, and labeling players as dirty. And you heard it from a guy who was one of the best safeties, you know, in the early part of the 2000s. That the safeties are pretty much handcuffed, and DBs are handcuffed, and you can't do much. So, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. Perfect is a dirty player. Other players in the league don't deserve to get fined, and some do. But I think this whole softer NFL and just catering towards the offensive players is definitely something that needs to be looked at as a whole, not just that there's these dirty guys coming in here. So I think he stressed a good point, and something that I thought immediately when I saw that Cincinnati Bengals Pittsburgh Steelers game, because now it's front-page headlines, but I think it's a deeper-rooted issue to that whole thing, and Roy touched on that.
Yeah. Dave, what's your bottom line for tonight?
I think I want to give the Knicks some love, man. They pulled out a good win tonight. They played most of the second half without Melo. And they've been grooving, man. You know, I'm not a Knicks fan, but I give my Knicks fans a hard time. But I'm giving them some love, man. They've been looking pretty good over the last couple of weeks, so give them a shout out.
Yeah, they're 20-20, so I think Gary's having a fit. My bottom line tonight is really condolences go out to former Butler center Andrew Smith, who died after losing his battle to cancer at the age of 25, a young man who played for Butler University and was actually one of those, he was actually on the 2010 team. He was a freshman reserve, played as a sophomore and stuff, and I think he had 5 points and 9 rebounds in the loss to UConn in the title game. But I thought it was a classy and noble situation by Stevens to go visit the young man and miss one of these Celtic games. So condolences go out to Andrew Smith and his family. That about wraps up the show, guys. Really appreciate it. I'd like to thank the outstanding one, Roy Williams, jumping on the line with us. More importantly, we'd like to thank you for tuning in. Don't forget, we'll do it all over again Saturday and Sunday, and we'll stick with this football theme because you just know. It's so much that's going on. Bottom Line Sports Show is out, and we say peace.